We begin the current daven something super daven tzadi. We begin four lines down from the time of the Yamin. The Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous topics that have discussed in halachas of collecting a ksuba. So the Mishnah says that katan sheisi of regarding a minor that his father married him off. So ksubasa kayemes. So the ksuba that was written for his wife, which was written when he was a minor, is going to be valid. Now, although a minor actually cannot have kedushin, however, his father married him off. However, this that he kept the ksuba when they got older, that ksuba will be valid. And the reason is shamanas kein kaima. It's for that reason that he remained married to her. So although when it was written, the ksuba really didn't have any validity because although his father, quote, married him off, he wasn't really married. He has to be an adult. He has to make the kinyan. A father can marry off his daughter, but cannot marry off his son. So although he married him off and he wrote a ksuba for her, although it wasn't valid, but if he remains married to her when he becomes an adult, and then that bia, when he becomes an adult, creates kedushin, that ksuba that was originally written will be the ksuba of their marriage. Similarly, gershin is gaira ishta imay, regarding a convert that his wife converted with him, so ksubasa, the ksuba that he wrote for her when he was a non-Jew, kayemes, will also be valid. Shamanaske and Kaimuk, again, because it's for that intention, both of them are now entering into biblical, into halachically valid marriages, which they didn't have before when he was a minor or when he was a non-Jew. Now, although when it was written, it wasn't valid, but now when they're getting married, what's the assumption? It's based on the original ksuba, and therefore their wives will be able to collect that ksuba. Now, on this halacha, the Mishnah, the Gemara says, Amr Avuna. Avuna explains, he says, Lo yishanu, we didn't learn this halacha. Elamano masayim, we know there's two parts to ksuba from what the husband gives to the wife. There's the primary part of the ksuba, which is the tnai bezin, which every single woman has to get. If she's a mana, she gets a mana. If she's a besula, she gets a masayim. So Rav Huna says it's regarding that part of the ksuba that she's going to collect, even though it was written when he was a minor or a non-Jew. Avotei sefer seinla, he says, however, regarding the additional parts that he added on, that actually she doesn't get. And the reason is because the only way you could collect it is based on the document. But the document is like a worthless piece of paper because it has no validity in halacha. It was written when he was a non-Jew, it was written when he was a minor. And therefore, the only thing that she is collecting based on the new marriage, which is when he becomes Jewish or when he becomes an adult, is the primary part which every single woman gets. Which Tosfos asks, if so, so what exactly is the chiddush of the Mishnah? That's almanas kein kaima, it's with this understanding that he kept her. What I mean, even if he wouldn't have written for her ksuba, the halach is, as we mentioned in previous dafim, that she gets it even though it wasn't written because it's tnai ksuba, it's a maisa bezdin. So what's the chiddush? And that Tosfos says, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that when he married her, she was a besula, a virgin. So even though that when he finally became an adult or when he converted, she was already ba'ula, they already had intimacy. So even so, she's still going to get a ksuba of 200 because that's what it means, amanas kin kaima. That the new halachic marriage should be based on how they were when they originally got married, which was, in halacha, 200. So although she doesn't get the additional part, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is she will get 200 if when they got married she was a besula. Now that's the opinion of Rav Huna. But Rabbi Huda Amar, he argues, and he says, Afil teisefes yeshla. He says that the woman, since the husband is retaining their marriage, which he had from before, coming into the halachic marriage, he retains it based on the original ksuba. So not only does she get mona masayim, she even gets whatever he had added when they had originally been married, either as a non-Jew or as a minor. Now, however, the Gemara asks Meisav, the Gemara asks in this interpretation of Rabbi Huda from the following brisa. The Bryce is talking about the case of our Mishnah, which you have a minor that he became an adult now, and you have a non-Jew who was married and converted. So on that, the Bryce says that if Chidshu, if now, when he's finally an adult, or when he's finally a Jewish person, now he adds on to the original ksuba that he had written when he was a non-Jew or a minor, so that the Bryce says, and they tell us Macha Chidshu. So then she takes for her ksuba when she finally gets divorced or widowed, what he had added on now when it was a halachic marriage. Now the assumption of the Gemara's question is that she only takes what he had added on to the primary ksuba, which is the mana masayim. And therefore the Gemara asks, chitshu in, it sounds like only what he had added on now is what she gets, but le chitshu loy, but what he had not added on later, but rather what was only added on, let's say originally, that she doesn't get. So the Gemara says, no, it's not difficult for Rabbi Yehuda, because Eim Af Mashachidshu, the Chiddush of the Brice is saying that even what he adds on now, which generally you only write a ksuba when you're getting married, now it's being written on, not when they're getting married, but when it becomes a halachic marriage. So and that is what we're, the Chiddush of the Brice is saying, that not only should you get the Manu Masayim and the Tesefes, which was originally written, but even what's being added on now. And therefore it doesn't refute Rabbi Yehuda. However, the Gemara says, but V'oloi Tani Hachi, but we didn't learn like this in the Brice. Brice says, Chidshu, what he added on, and they tell us Masha Chidshu. So she takes what was added on. So fine, that we were able to answer it, and they tell us Af Masha Chidshu, but the Brisa continues. Says Loi Chidshu, if he didn't add on anything now, meaning now when he became Jewish or when he became an adult, so then the Brisa says clearly Besula gave him a Sayim Amana Mana, that the Besula only gets 200, and Amana Mana meaning not more, doesn't get Vitei Sefes. So the Gemara says, you're right, Tuvit Rabbi Yehuda. Definitely from this price, it's refutation of Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation of our Mishnah. And that is because she only gets, when it says Amanas Ken Kaima, it's like Rav Huna said, only gets Mona Masai. Now the Gemara explains that Rabbi Yehuda must nitin at Teise. Rabbi Yehuda's reading of our Mishnah is what misled him. Because hu savak subasa kayemes, he thought when the Mishnah says, har kesuba is valid, that Akula Milsakoy is going whatever was written in the original Kesuba, because it says if he wrote it when he was a non-Jew or minor, $5,000, whatever it was, that Kesuba is Kayim. That means everything in it. And that the Gemara says, well, that's not the case as we see from the Kesuba, and as Rav Huna interpreted, it's a Iker Kesuba Koy. When it says that the Kesuba is Kayim, it doesn't mean everything written in there. It means the primary Tanai Kesuba of Maisa Bezna, which is Mana Fana Mana and Masayim for Abisula. We shall return to the 9th parak of Masechta Ksubos, parak HaKesev LeIshta, and with that we begin the 10th parak, Masechta Ksubos parak Misha HaYonosui, which as the name of the parak indicates, is when someone was married to many different women. And what are the ramifications regarding their collecting of the Ksuba and their inheritance? So the Mishnah begins, Misha HaYonosui Shtei Noshim Memes. If someone was married to two women, and he died, so now they both want to collect, as widows, their Ksuba. Now, what's the halacha if there's only enough for one of the ksubas to collect? He doesn't have that much money now that he died. So the Mishnah says, Harishayna kedemis lishnia. The woman that was married first, she became, so to speak, a creditor, a bachoyv first. There was a lien on his estate because when the ksuba was written for her. So she collects first before the second woman does. So too, if let's say after he died, the two wives die before they got a chance to collect their ksuba. So now their inheritors are coming to collect the ksuba from the husband. So the same thing is, the inheritors of the first wife, they collect before the inheritors of the second wife. Now the Mishnah says as follows. Let's say we're talking about that both wives died, but in different time periods. For example, Nosa es Rishayna v'mesa. If let's say he married one woman, and she died when he was still alive. Okay, so then he gets remarried. Nosa shnia umesu. So he marries a different woman. And then he dies when she's still alive. Now, as Rashi explains, although both children from the two wives are coming to collect the ksuba, halachically they're coming from different angles. The inheritors of the first wife, when they come to collect their mother's ksuba, essentially, according to the basic halacha, there's no right for them to collect their mother's ksuba. Because the mother's ksuba is only when she gets divorced, which she didn't, or when she gets widowed, which she didn't. She died before the husband ever died. But there is a halacha, as we learned previously on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis, what's called ksubas benin dichron, which is that the husband promises the wife when he gets married, he says, don't worry, that your money that you're bringing into the marriage that your father is giving to us when we're getting married will stay in your family, because benin dichron, the havel l'chi minayu, your male sons that you'll have from me, they'll be able to collect your ksuba after I die. That's what the husband says. So therefore, the Yarsha Hirishayna, the inheritors of the first woman who died when the husband was still alive, they're either coming to collect their ksubas benin dichron, or they're coming to just split the Yerusha of their father with the sons of the second wife. So therefore, on that, the Mishnah tells us that shnia v'yarsha'a kaidman, the second woman and her inheritors, they come first in the collection of the mother's ksuba because they have the halachic status of a balas chayv, of a creditor. A woman collecting ksuba is owed something. However, and that's why they come before liyoshe rishayna, before the inheritors of the first woman. Because although the first ones are also coming to collect their mother's ksuba, and actually, as we said seemingly before, that their mother's ksuba had a shibud beforehand, so why do the second ones come before the first one in this case? It's because the first ones are coming to inherit their father. Because the text of the ksuba that writes, when the husband tells the wife that ksuba's been in dikr and your male sons are going to collect your ksuba, it says yirtun, they're going to inherit. Now therefore, when there's inheritance, the inheritors first have to pay up that when there's obligations on the estate. For example, there's a creditor. Now the second sons are having the halachic status of creditors because their mother is a creditor because the husband died first, so she's an almana, she has a chayiv. So therefore, although the first ones came first, but they're only collecting the mother ksuba as a yairish, that's why the second sons, who they're coming as a bal chayiv, they come first before any inheritance can happen. Now the Gemara makes an inference from the first halach of our Mishnah. Midiktani harishayin nekedemis lishnia. From the fact that we said a terminology of priority, of precedence, of preference, of who comes first. We said that when there's married two women and then they die, so they both want to collect as widows, so we say that the first one comes before the second one. Now, v'leketani harishayna yesh la v'shniya ein la. We didn't learn a more basic, that's more absolute type of terms, which is that, no, when there's as Rashi explains, obviously the Mishnah is talking about that there's only enough money for one of the ksubas, because if not, what's the difference who comes first? You're going to get anyway, no point in pushing, there's enough for everybody. So obviously we're talking about that there's not enough. So you could have just said very simply that the first ones have their ksuba and the second one don't, because what do you mean they come before? There's not enough anyway. They get and they don't get. It doesn't say that. It says the first ones come before they have priority before the second ones. So machlal, the inference that Gemara says is the kadma shniya v'tafsa. Let's say the second woman, let's say that wife or that her inheritors come first and grab first. That lo mefkin mina. Obviously, we don't take it away from them. Even though the first woman had the lien first. Now, because that's why it says kedemis, they come first. But if someone else takes beforehand, even though that's not the way it should be done, but they could keep it. So if so, the Gemara says, Shema Minoah, what we can infer from this is that since kedemis is only a terminology of l'ketchila, of preference, therefore, however, if bal chayiv mu'ucher, shakadim agave, if you have creditors that somebody owes people money, and obviously the earlier creditors have an earlier priority and they have the chayiv first, but if let's say a later creditor came and grabbed first, samasha gava gava, obviously what he took, he can keep, and we don't take away from him, because that's l'chayir what we see from our Mishnah, where the second woman, if she grabs, that she could keep it, because why would it say kedemis? And if she could keep it, obviously you see that a later bachayir that grabs could keep it. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a raya. Lo'il me'em l'chayir, really I'll tell you, masha gava le'gava. If a later creditor comes and grabs, same thing in the case of our Mishnah, if the second woman grabs first, she can't keep it. My kedemes, and what is the terminology? How do we translate kedemes? It's legarmi ketani. It's an absolute term to tell us that actually, yes, the second woman doesn't get anything, even if she grabs. Kedem not. Like the Gemara says, we learn in Mishnah Baba Basha that uses the same terminology where, in regards to inheritance, it says that ben kedem labas, that a son comes before daughters when it comes to inheritance. Now, obviously, that's an absolute term because a daughter, if she would take something from inheritance, she wouldn't be able to keep it because she has no halachic status whatsoever regarding to inheritance when there are male sons. And then the Gemara says, no deek you can make, kedemis could mean an absolute term. Now, ikadami, actually, there are those that say the other way around. Their deek was, midaloi ketani, from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say, im kadmash niyabatafsa, that if the second woman goes and grabs first, that she could keep it, even though there's not enough money for the first one's ksuba, that it doesn't say, emutzimiyada, that we don't take it away from her. So machlal, the inference you can read in from that hashmata, from that omission, is that the ikad mishniya b'tafsa, that if the second one comes and grabs, then mafkima, that actually we would take it away from her. So shema mino, actually we can make an inference the other way around. That b'chayiv mo'ucher shakad b'gava, that a later b'chayiv that comes and grabs, mashar gava l'gava, what was taken cannot be kept, and it has to be given back to the first b'chayiv. So the Gemara says, no, that's also not a raya. Because la'ilam emelucha mashar gava gava, I could actually tell you that what the second bal chayiv, in this case, the second woman, the second widow comes and takes, actually is a collection. But it's only I did a ton of, since we had to learn in the Sefer, which is the second case of our Mishnah, that shniya v'yersheham, we had a different case over there, where the first woman died when the husband was still alive. Then the second wife, the husband died before the second wife. So there we said that the Shnia, the second wife, and her inheritors, when since he died first, we said Kodem L'Yerusha Rishayna, we said that they come first before the inheritors of the first one, not like the first case. And the reason being is, as we explained, because they're Bachayv, and the first ones are only Yarshim. So now, there, the terminology of Kodem that we said, you can't say over there that if the first inheritors would come and grab that Eimetzi Miyadim, that we wouldn't take it away from them. And the reason being is because obviously we would take it away from them, even if the first inheritors hold on to it. And the reason being is because they're, again, as we explained, only Yarshim. They're only inheritors. That's the Allah of Ksubis Benin Dechron. And all the assets of the inheritors are Meshubid, there's a lien to the document of the Baal Chayiv, which is what the second ones are. And therefore, as the Gemara continues on to Amud Beis, so since we couldn't say in the case of the Seifa, this halacha of, although we're using the terminology of koyman to say, oh, but tell us that if the first ones grab that they could keep it, we couldn't say that because they're obviously they can't keep it. So Taninami, so therefore also the ratio, we use the terminology of Leketchila, that Harishayin the Kedemis Lashniya, that the first one comes before the second one. And we didn't learn that, oh, but if the second one comes and grabs, then we don't take it away, because, again, we couldn't say that in the case of the Seifa, which there we would take it away. And therefore, the halacha could be that that is the halacha, that if the second one comes and takes it away, we don't take it away. However, again, just because of the uniformity of the case of the Seifa, which we couldn't say that because, obviously, there that we would take it away, so therefore, in the ratio, we also didn't say that. But again, therefore, the Gemara concludes there's no right to either way about when the later Baal Chayiv comes and grabs away, if they're Masha Gava Gava or not. Either way, we can refute the Diuk from our Mishnah. Now the Gemara moves on. In our Mishnah, we said that regarding the case of the Seifa, that Nasa Es Rishayin, we said that if he married the first one, then she died when he was still alive, then he dies, and then he marries a second woman, then he dies. So then we said that the second ones, not like the case of the Reisha, which we said generally the woman that comes first, she gets first. The case of the Seifa, the later ones, they come first. Again, because they're Baal Chayiv, which they're coming to collect, their mother Ksubor, she's coming to collect, and the first ones are only as Yerusha. Now the Gemara says, Shema Minutlas. We can learn three unique halachas, chidushim, in the halacha of Ksubas Benin Dichron, which is what the first ones are coming to collect. Shema Minutlas, first of all, the first halacha you could infer from here is that when you have two wives that die, and however, achas b'chaya v'achas b'moise, one is when he's still alive, and one is when he's dead, meaning like the case of our Mishnah, of the Seifa, that yesh lohen, that the inheritors of the first woman who died when he was still alive, will collect ksubas benin dichron. They will collect this halacha of that the male son's inheriting what really the mother didn't end up getting, that the father really got, because she died first, that they will collect even in such a case. Now, the chiddush of this is that we don't say that when did we institute this concept of ksubas benin dichron. That's where both of the mothers died when the father was still alive. Now, although if that's the case, so when the father is dying last, they're really inheriting him, so what's the point of everybody getting their mother's own ksuba? The difference would be is because if one of the woman's ksubas was more than the other one, so that's the halacha, we want the father-in-laws to give a lot of money, but they're saying, oh, the other wife's children are going to inherit that. So we say that, no, each one takes their mother's ksuba, and the rest, which is the rest of the father's estate, they split equally, which is that Yerusha goes after the father, it's paternal. And the reason for this is because since they're both coming, both of the woman's children are coming from the halachic status of collecting the mother's ksuba because of the halacha benin dichrin, which is really essentially the inheritance of the father. So however, ultimately they're not going to come to argue, not going to fight, because each one is really getting their father's inheritance, which is splitting equally, and their mother's ksuba, which is really coming from the father anyway, but that's the halacha of ksuba's benin dichrin. But we would have thought to say that if one of the women died when the father was still alive, and one of them died after the father had already died, where now the second inheritors, when they're coming to collect their mother's ksuba, they're coming to collect inheritance of their mother's obligation that's owed to her, of the mother's debt. They're not coming collecting it from their father, whereas the sons of the first one, when they're coming to collect more than their share of the inheritance of the father, they're really coming from the father's inheritance, because it actually says yirtan that they'll inherit from the father. Maybe we would think that they shouldn't take, because maybe they're going to come to argue and they're going to say, what do you mean? Why are you taking more from our father's inheritance? That's us, than us. Because we're not taking our mother's ksuba from the inheritance of the father. We're getting it because our mother was owed that money. Now, obviously, what we can infer from the halacha of our mission is that we don't say that, and we're not concerned that this is going to cause a dispute. Now, mimai, where could we infer that from? Midiktani, from the fact that we learned in the Mishnah, Shnia v'yershel koidin l'yersh rishon, we said that the second woman and her inheritors come before the first inheritors, meaning from the woman that died when the father was still alive. Now, the diak is miktim hu dekadmi. It's just that they get first dibs, meaning when there's only enough for one, then they come first, unlike the case of the resha. But ha'ikor shakli, but you could infer, but if there is enough for both, then the first ones do take. And if they do take that, you see that even achas b'chayev, achas b'maisai, although they're coming from the halacha of Yerusha, and the second one's only coming from a chayev, so it comes out from Yerusha, the sons of the first ones are taking more in the division of the state, we're not concerned for that, because ultimately both are getting the ksuba, and we see that we'll say ksuba has been indifferent even in such a case. Now, shema minah, we could also make a second inference of a chiddush, that ksuba nasis meitzel l'chaverta, that a collection of a ksuba can be in the halacha of having surplus in regards to the other one. In other words, that although the halacha of the institution of kesubas ben nedichron was only instituted, that if there is excess more than the two kesubas being inherited by the sons of the two wives, at least a dinner, and the reason for that is, why does it have to be that surplus? Because if each one's going to collect the kesuba of the mother and there's not going to be anything left over, that's going to be rabbinic Yerusha, because Ksumas ben Nichon is only a rabbinic halacha, and it's going to be uprooting the biblical halacha of inheritance, which is that it has to go after the father, not based on this Ksumas ben Nichon. And if there's nothing left, then there's nothing for them to inherit based on the paternal halacha. So as we're going to learn on the coming daf, that, and as we explained this already on daf and Beis and Beis, that's what it has to be, a meiser to the Ksumas, at least a dinner. Now, that the Gemara is explaining, that's only if both of them, the mothers died when the father was still alive. And that is, so when both of them are coming to inherit their mother's ksuba, they're coming from this halacha of ksuba's ben nedichron. But if one of them died when the father was still alive, and therefore they're coming from ksuba's ben nedichron, and one of their mothers died after the father had already died, so the second ones, when they're coming to collect the ksuba, they're not coming from ben nedichron, they're coming to collect it because it's a chayv. There was a debt that was owed from the father to the mother, when he died, which she's a widow, she has a debt. Therefore, the chiddush is, the Gemara is saying is that there's no greater inheritance than that. And you're not really uprooting the biblical inheritance, even if after the first ones then collect their ksubas ben nedichron, that there's nothing left over, there's no surplus. The reason being, as Rashi explains, is because when he dies, so his estate falls in front of the inheritance. Now, when there's a shtar chayv, when there's a creditor coming to collect by their father, both inheritors from both wives are fulfilling a mitzvah to pay up their father's debt. Now, as Rashi's words are, v'hihi rishasan, that is their inheritance. What do you do with the inheritance? So you take it for yourself. But when there's creditors, part of the halacha of inheritance is giving it to those creditors. And therefore, what the Gemara is saying is that this ksuba of the second woman's children has the same halachic status as meiser, as surplus, for the inheritance. And therefore, the sons of the first ones could go ahead and collect the ksubas ben nedichron, even though after they collect, there's not going to be anything left, because the giving of the ksuba to the second sons is a fulfillment of the halachas of Yerusha, which is to give it to a creditor, which is what their mother is. And therefore, that will be enough, even though after the first ones collect the ksubas ben nedichron, there's no meisa dinner. Now, the Gemara says, Mimai, how do you see that chiddush from this case of our Mishnah? But the Leketoni, from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say im yesha meisa dinner, that this halacha only applies that if there's a surplus of a dinner, that then the second ones come first before the first ones, which again the deek we made of the first mamina was that, but if there is enough money, then the first ones get also. But it doesn't say that the first ones get also the ksumas ben nedichron only if after that there's also a surplus of a dinner. Obviously, it's even if there's no surplus. How does that work out? The coming daf says you need to have. That's because the second woman's ksuba is considered in halachas of Yerusha, which is what Yerushim do, is to pay up a baal chayv, which is what she is. Now, Shema Mina, we also learn a third unique halacha, which is that ksubas ben nedichron leitarfa mimishabdi. That obviously, that the ksuba of the male sons, again, which is only applicable when the woman dies before her husband, that still he promises her that her sons are going to collect her ksuba, that they don't collect from encumbered property, from that which there's a lien on, which is not that the husband have, which is either that he sold off or that he gave off to other people. And what the chiddush in this is that that there's a discussion regarding what is the terminology used for ksubas bnei dichron, if it's yirtun tnan, which as the Gemara is concluding that it's inheritance, or yisvun tnan, that it should be given to them, which is like a gift, which would give them the status of a bal chayiv, of a creditor, and therefore that would mean that their shibud, their lien, actually comes before the second sons, even though the second sons are also bal chayiv, as we just explained, that they should be able to go ahead and collect from the second sons who are later creditors. Obviously, what the Gemara is inferring is that they're inheritors and that the nusach that it says in the Ksub is yirtun, and therefore they cannot collect from Mishabadim. As the Gemara explains, if you would entertain that they're yisvun, that they get it and it's not inheritance, and that they could therefore grab their halacha like a bal chayiv who could collect from Mishabadim, so then lacy b'nei rishayna v'litrafal b'nei shniyah. Even if you say that the second ones are creditors and they could collect first, but then the first ones, who they have an earlier debt that's owed to them, if you would say yisvun, that they're like a bal chayiv, then they could go ahead and collect from the second ones, obviously that they only have halacha of Yerusha and not of yisvun, and therefore they cannot collect from Mishabadim, and therefore their shibud, we don't say that they could collect from the second ones who have a later shibud, they don't collect from Mishabadim. And that's why it's only if there's more left over from after that the second ones take first. So again, those are the three unique halachas we learn from our Mishnah. Now, on that maskil of Ravashi, Ravashi asked on the inferences that the Gemara made from our Mishnah. Mimai, he starts with the first inference. How do you know that you say that even if there's achas b'chayv and achas b'moisai, that only one of the sons are going to collect ksubas b'nin dichron, and the other ones are collecting the mother ksubas coming from their mother, not from the father, and that you're saying that, oh, we're not concerned, it's not going to cause fights. Maybe dil malayim locha, maybe truthfully he says, I'll tell you, achas b'chayv and achas b'moisai, ain't laying ksubas b'nin dichron. It's not true. If they're both not coming from ksubas b'nin dichron, which is what the assumption of the general halacha would be, that they're both coming from the same viewpoint, then actually they will not collect ksubas b'nin dichron, the sons of the first one, because it's going to cause fights. Umay koymin, so what, but what was your diik? What is this that it says that the second ones come before the first ones, which sounds like, but that if there is something more, that then the first ones do take? That's l'nachla katani. That's for the general rule of inheritance. Not to say that the first ones come after the second ones to also take their mother's ksuba, but rather they come after them to go and whatever's left over, like regular inheritors, that they come to split with the second ones, but not because of ksuba's bin indichon. Now, v'chitemen, if you're going to say, but then, yoshe harishoyno lomali, why does it call the sons of the first ones the inheritors of the first ones, which sounds like that they're inheriting their mother, but they're not getting anything from their mother, because the Yerusha comes from the father, and you're telling me now that they don't get ksuba's bin indichon. So why does it say in the Sefer that there's something of the Yersha Harishayna? So on that Rav Ashi says, no, I did the Tanish Nei Yersha, because we had to call the sons of the second one, the inheritors of the second one, and the reason being is because they do inherit their mother, they do collect their mother's ksuba. So Tananam, the Yersha Harishayna. So therefore we also called the sons of the first ones, which we really should have just called them B'nei Rishayna, we call them Yersha Harishayna, again, based on the fact that they're inheritors, but not because they're coming from inheriting her. It's just a name we give them, which means B'nei HaRishayna. It's just we kept the same appellation we give to the second ones, we give it to the first ones. So therefore he refutes the necessity of making the dig of the first halacha. Now, with the kamrit, and this regarding that you made the second unique halacha, that you said that kesuba nasis moisil chaverta, that the ksuba of the second woman, the collection of that kesuba by her or inheritors, becomes like surplus for the first one's ksuba. In other words, that it's not going to uproot the biblical halacha of Yerusha, even if after the first sons collect the ksubas b'nei dichron, there's nothing left over, because as we explained, because that's a fulfillment of the halachas of Yerusha. And that he says, no, maybe truthfully I'll tell you, in ksuba nasas moisil chaverta. A ksuba cannot be considered a fulfillment of the halachas of Yerusha to make surplus for the other one. Here we're talking about that actually, that there was a surplus of a dinner after the first one collect their ksubas b'nei dichron. In other words, what as Rashi explains, what obviously Rav Ashi is saying is that because since the second Shema Menor was based on the first Shema Menor, and he already refuted the first one, what he's saying is that even if you say that this that is said in the Mishnah that Koidmei, the Yerusha Shnia, come before the Yerusha Rishonah, that you want to infer that they collect their Ksuba before the first sons do collect Ksubas Menendichin, which was the first inference you made, which I said that's Lav Dafka. But even if you want to say that, I could still tell you that you won't make the second Shema Menor, because it's told that there is a surplus dinner. Now, although the Gemara's question, which was the proof of its assumption, was, but what do you mean? It doesn't say Yesham Maisa dinner. On that, Rav Ashi is saying that's not a raya, because the Mishnah that comes later tells us that this halacha only applies if there's a Maisa dinner, and therefore there's no need for our Mishnah to have necessitated that understanding and saying it's only Maisa dinner. Obviously, we know it's only if there's a Maisa dinner, and therefore there's no diik, not of the Shema Menor Rishayna, and not the Shema Menor Hashniya. Now, however, the Gemara does tell us that va'achas b'chai, va'achas b'moisa, this first Shema Menor, which is being debated if you could learn that from a Mishnah or not, actually the Gemara tells us tanoihi. It's actually machloikas tanoim. If the sons of the first one take the ksubas benin dichrin, even when the sons of the second one are not coming from that, they're coming from a bal chayiv, if that's taken or not. The Tanoim learn the Braisa. The Braisa says, Mesu achas b'chai v'achas b'moisa. This same case, if one of the women died when the husband was still alive and the other one only died after this, the husband had already been dead. So Benana says, Yecholim b'nei Rishonia, loyim al-bei b'nei Ashniya, the sons of the first ones could tell the sons of the second one, b'nei balas chayvatem, you are the sons of a creditor. That's how you're collecting your ksuba. So therefore, t'lu ksubas imchem, you go ahead, you go first. You take your mother's ksuba. Utsu'u. And go out and then leave. Now, what does that mean? That's cryptic terminology. So Rashi explains that obviously we're talking about that there's no maisa dinner, there's no surplus, nothing left over after the first sons subsequently take their ksubas benindichin. From the fact that they're telling the sons of the second one, go out. And the reason being is because if there was something left over after both ksubas were collected, so why would they tell the sons of the second one, go out? That although they took their The second one already took their mother's ksuba, and the first ones took their mother's ksuba based on ksuba's ben nedichim, but there's still something left over. Obviously, we're talking about that there's nothing left over after the first ones will collect their ksuba's ben nedichim. And obviously, what the sons of the first ones are telling the sons of the second one is that you are the sons of a creditor, and you're collecting your mother's ksuba since it's a chayv. So therefore, you go ahead and you go first. But you're not collecting it b'tayris ben nedichim. And that is what the sons of the first ones are telling the second one, so therefore we don't need a Maisa dinner. And that is because there's no greater fulfillment of the biblical Yerusha inheritance than this, that we, and us and you, are going in and paying up our father's debt, which is to pay up your mother's ksuba, which, yes, it's going into your pockets, but it's a fulfillment of the halachas of Yerusha. And therefore they're telling them, take your mother's ksuba, because it's coming as a teres Yerusha, so then leave, because we're going to take the rest as benin dichrin, even though there's nothing left over after that. That's what Benana says. B'Kiva, I mean, he says, then no, he says, from the moment that the husband dies and the second woman is still alive, so kfar kovtza nachla, so the inheritance of benin dichrin, which would apply when the father is still alive and the woman dies, it gets transitioned, it jumps, milifnei b'nei rishayna, from the option of that what the first sons had up until now when the mother was dead and the father was still alive, but now that the second woman is still alive, so v'nafla, so then that goes ahead and it falls to be considered a regular Yerusha like other inheritance, also l'fnei b'nei hashniya, in front of the sons of the second one. Now, and that's even if there would be a surplus of a dinner, that the sons of the first ones will not take their ksubas b'nei dichrin. The reason being is because Rebbe Akiva holds that achas b'chai v'achas b'moisai, we never instituted that halacha of collecting ksubas b'nei dichrin. As we said before, that causes fights. So the Gemara says, my labo kemifki, isn't this what they're arguing about? The Mar Sava, the bananas held, achas b'moisai v'achas b'chai v'achas b'moisai, that yesh l'n ksubas b'nei dichrin, that they do have ksubas b'nei dichrin, as we just explained previously from Rashi. That's why they tell them to go out, even though because obviously go out means there's nothing left over. And even though you're a b'chayv, and we're ksubas b'nei dichrin, doesn't make a difference. You collect ksubas b'nei dichrin in such a case. Mar Sava and Rebbe Akiva held that, no, achas b'chai v'achas b'moisai, ain't l'n ksubas b'nei dichrin, there is no ksubas b'nei dichrin. As he says, that once the husband dies and there's still another woman, so therefore, then, there were only going to be a deraisa diga inheritance, which is, and not the rabbinic, because the sons of the second one will be only collecting it based as a bal chayiv. So the Gemara says, no, I'm a rabbi. He says that Ashkechesinu l'rabban the beirav. He says, I encountered the rabbis of the yeshiva. The Yasra Kami, they were sitting and they said as follows. The truth is that even Rabbi Kiva would agree that regarding this case of Achz Bechayiv Achz B'Maisai, that the sons of the first ones will collect the Ksubas Ben Nedechen. Now, V'hocha, but here, actually, what they're arguing about is regarding the second Shema Minah we had been discussing. Not the first one, as the Gemara had said, but rather regarding the second Halach we were Mechadish. B'Ksuba Nasas Maisai L'Chavarta, regarding, do we say that the second children's Ksuba, the second wife's children, that kesuba, does it become considered as surplus to fulfill the Yerusha Raisa for the first woman's kesuba, as kesuba has been nedichen. And the same thing would apply to creditors. Kamifically, that's what they're arguing about as follows. Mar Savar, Benanas held, kesuba nasas moisel l'chaverta. A kesuba could be considered, like the second Shema Minah the Gemara had originally assumed from a Mishnah, that a ksuba could be made as a meiser, again, fulfillment of a Yerusha deraisa for the first woman's ksuba's been indifferent. And for what del Balchayv? Same thing applies to a Balchayv, to a creditor. When the creditor comes and takes money, and now all that's left is exactly enough for the second one's ksuba and the first one's ksuba, that there's not going to be any surplus, they'll still be able to take ksuba's been indifferent because giving to a creditor is a fulfillment of the Yerusha deraisa. Whereas Amar Sava, but Rabbi Kiva held that the reason of Rabbi Kiva over here is because he said that not because Achas Bechayiv Achas B'Maisai there is no Ksubas Ben Nedechen, there is, but the reason is because here there's no Maisa dinner. And the reason is because he held that in Ksuba Nasas Maisa L'Chaverta, a Ksuba cannot be made as surplus for the other one, even if the second one's Ksuba that they're collecting is a Chayiv. And V'hu Adin L'Bal Chayiv, same thing applies to a regular creditor. That the halacha is that where both of the wives died, let's say, when the husband was still alive, where both of them are coming to collect from Ksubas Ben Nedichren, and there is a Maisa dinner, which usually should allow them to collect. But that, a surplus dinner, has a lien to a creditor, so that's not considered Maisa, because ultimately that chayiv is taken before they get a chance to split, and when it comes time for them to split the inheritance, then there's nothing left over, and therefore that will be considered uprooting the Yerusha Deraisa. They don't hold, and the way the Gemara is explaining right now, that in the halacha of Rabbi Kiva, that's considered that there's a Maisa, and therefore he says that's why there's not going to be any Ksubas Ben Nedichren in such a case. Now that the Gemara continues. So Rabbi says, "Vamin luano," and I said to the Tamid HaChachamim in the yeshiva, that no, a little bit different than what you're saying. Bebal chayiv kulei amalei pligin. Regarding a creditor, no one argues that the hava meisa. Even Rabbi Kiva would agree that would be considered a surplus, and the reason being is because since the document goes out on old inheritors, so it comes out that old inheritors are paying it up, and that is the biblical halacha of inheritance, that they fulfill the mitzvah of paying up their father's obligations. And therefore, there that would be considered Maisa, and therefore the Ksubas Ben Nedichren in such a case, even though there's no other surplus, would be allowed to be collected. Kipaligi b'ksuba. That rabbi says, the whole machlikis Rabbi Kiva and Ben Anas was, regards a ksuba, meaning when you have Achas B'chayiv Achas B'Maisai, and the second ksuba that's being collected first is a chayiv, that's where they argue. Ben Anas held, doesn't make a difference. Who cares that it's his mother's, one of the inherited mother's ksuba, ultimately it's a chayiv, and therefore that's Meister, as we explained regarding everyone agrees by Baal Chayv. But Rabbi Kiva held that no. Here it's different than a regular debt that's owed. And the reason being is because here they themselves are taking it. And therefore, these sons of the second woman, they're taking, they're not paying. So it comes out that there is no biblical inheritance that's being happening over here, because there's no mitzvah they're doing by paying up the father's debts. It's because they're taking, they're not paying. And therefore, the takana of Yerusha Ben Nedichren, which is only rabbinic, cannot come ahead and uproot the Nachlo Deraisa. Now, that mask of the Rabbi Yisrael, however, asks on this. He says, Ihachi, if that's the case, that you're telling us that the Machlekes Rabbi Kiva and Benan, this is only in this particular case, because there was no Meiser, but you're saying that if there was a Meiser, if there was surplus, that they wouldn't argue, and that they would agree to the first inference to this halacha of Achas B'chayiv Achas B'Maisai, that even Rabbi Kiva would agree that the sons of the first one would collect Ksubas Ben Nedichren. But Rabbi Kiva Oimer Kvar Kavtza Nachla? What is this terminology that Rabbi Kiva uses that says that the inheritance already jumped from the sons of the first ones to be able to collect the ksubas bin the nichron, and it's already considered regla nachla, that everyone splits everything, which sounds like that there is no halacha here at all of ksubas bin the nichron at all. But what it should have said, according to your interpretation, is im yesh moisa dinner mebaile, should have said that if there is a surplus of a dinner, then they could take their ksubas bin the nichron. If not, then they don't. If you tell me they're only arguing when there's not, and it's saying that because there's no meiser, so why does it say this absolute type of term? It should have said depending if there's meiser din or not. So Elam Arisa, rather Arisa says that we had originally explained that achas b'chayev, achas b'meiser, kamifli, it is as we had said before Rabbi tried refuting that inference, that must be that even if there is a meiser, even if there is surplus, Rabbi Kiva comes to say that since the sons of the second one are collecting it only after he had died, so therefore, there's not going to be ksubas ben nidichron for the sons of the first one, and obviously for sure, if there wouldn't be any mice. And the reason being, as we explained before, because that's going to be usul and suya. We never instituted in such a situation where one woman's children should collect it as ksubas ben nidichron, the other one's not, as a chayiv, it's going to cause the fights, because they're saying, you're taking more from my father's inheritance, which you're only coming from the Yerusha, more than us. It was only instituted when both wives died, before the father died, then he dies, then really they should split everything equally. But then the ksubas bin nidichron is a takana to say that no, but before they do that, in the inheritance itself, each child will get from his mother's inheritance some more, some less. And again, that's to promote a father-in-law to give more money. But again, but if one's b'chayv, one's b'maisai, Rabbi Kiva will hold ultimately that we'll never give ksubas bin nidichron, and that's why he uses this absolute terminology of kvar kaftza nachla, and not like the way Rabbi tried saying.